Hey folks, we've got a new workshop coming up that I'm really excited about. This is a topic that I don't talk about a whole lot on the show. This is September 23rd at noon, and this is going to be about debt. I find a lot of the teaching on this particular topic is not so great. It's very one-sided, or it misses a lot of detail that I think really needs to be addressed. You know, how do we get into it? We talk about that a little bit, but there, you know, some people say, well, you'd get into it because of lack of discipline. Well, no, it often is more nuanced than that. We're going to be talking about how do you get out of it? How do we change our mindset regarding it in lots of different ways? Some of the best advice I was ever given was like over 30 years ago that helped me a lot. And I'm going to share some of that in the workshop. And we're going to talk about the little known facts and myths about credit scores. A lot of people don't understand how credit scores work. So I'm going to get into that. And people ask about, now, Paul, what about 30 versus 15-year mortgages? And people think you always do one or the other. And that's more nuanced as well. And I'm going to be talking about strategically when to use one versus another and some of the thinking regarding that. So it's going to be a great workshop. I'm really excited about it. September 23rd at noon. Join us, and you can click in the show notes to sign up or go to paulwinkler.com/debt. We'll see you there.
Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
All right, this is the Investor Coaching Show, and I am Paul Winkler. And he is Evan Barnard, and he is
here.
You're always trying to figure out how I'm going to start the show, so I'm going to do it differently every single time.
Just see, there you go. Keeping people engaged.
Just quit your stuff, man.
Bueller.
Okay, so I'm in rare form today. No, I'm not in rare form. This is normal form. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. Guys, this is something I've been thinking deeply about for the past couple of days.
Lay it on us.
And I'm just thinking about, in the theme of why we do stuff the way we've always done it, you know, because of previous generations having done things in a certain way, and we just carry these things on much to, it can have bad outcomes when it really comes to retirement planning, especially because a lot of times people don't do retirement. And I'm going to get back to that. I'm going to get back to retirement planning. But I ran into this thing that I thought this would be a good topic just to talk about regarding how we have these ruts, so to speak, that we get into as humans, and we don't change the way we do things, even though changing would be a better thing to do. And it was this thing about the standard railroad gauge. And if you look at the distance between the rails of trains, right?
Right.
And you go, well, what's the distance? Well, it's 4 feet, 8.5 inches. And you go, that's kind of a really, really odd number. 4 feet, 8.5 inches. Where does that number come from? And, you know, you get into it and you go, okay, so this is how they built trains in England. And they designed the first trains that were used in America in England. And you go, okay, so why did they make them that way? Well, because the first rail lines were built by the same people that made the wagon tramways.
Right.
And you remember seeing those old pictures back, you know, where you were literally goes back 16th century, where you were hauling coal with horses on tracks.
Yeah, it looked like a trolley,
trolley. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was the tramway, and that was the gauge that they happened to use.
Mm-hmm.
4 feet, 8.5 inches. And you go, well, why did they make it that width? It was because the jigs and the tools that they used to build the wagons made the wheel spacing that way. So that's why they did it, right? And then you go, okay, so why did the wagons have this particular odd wheel spacing? And the reason gets down to, well, you know, I had these long distance roads in England, and that was the spacing of the wheel ruts. And the thing is, you had these rutted roads, and the reason that they were rutted is because, you know, previous vehicles that went down there caused those ruts. And the reason is because the Roman legions.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
so Evan, having military background, would probably know this kind of thing. I had no clue. I did not know any of this stuff. And if you made it a different distance apart, the wheels would actually break apart. Yeah. Is the problem. You know, so you got these wagon wheels that we use, and that was the distance between them. And you go, okay, so, all right, I get that. But why that distance? Why were the ruts in the road that different? Well, because the Roman war chariots formed the initial ruts over in Europe. So that's why it was that distance. And, you know, these 4 feet, 8.5 inches, that was the original specifications for the Imperial Roman war chariot. You look at this and go, okay, what does that lead to? Well, that leads to going, so why was it that distance? Well, it was because two horses together, so a couple of horses' butts are why we had that distance.
Is this a political statement? This
no,
is all going to get down
all.
To two
not,
horses
not,
behind?
Not at all. So if you look at this and you go, okay, so what does this lead to? Well, the space shuttle has these solid rocket boosters. And the engineers would have actually liked to have made these solid rocket boosters wider, but they couldn't because they had to get them to the space center on rails, which went through mountains, which were cut. They had the holes cut in the mountains, and you had to go through it, and it had to fit through that. So literally, our space shuttle technology has its origins going back 2,000 years.
Interesting.
And you just look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's fascinating. And I'm thinking about financial planning, and I'm going, so why is it? Because I've been teaching this workshop, and you know, this series of workshops on financial planning. And so why is it most people don't engage in financial planning? As you like to say, people spend more time planning their vacations than they do planning the longest vacation they'll ever be on, which is their retirement. And I'm thinking, well, why don't people, you know, you think about it. We learn so much from the previous generation, you know, the household that we grow up in and the people that we spend time with in our youth.
Yeah.
And I never saw my father doing a whole lot of time planning retirement. You know, really, never saw my neighbor's parents spending a whole lot of time planning for retirement. Well, why didn't they spend a lot of time? Well, the reason was because pensions. I mean, they had pensions, and they worked for companies. They worked for governments that had pension plans.
And life expectancy.
Well, I'm getting to that. That's another one. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
You get that as well. Life expectancy. People didn't live as long. And, you know, you think culturally, collectivism would have been a bigger deal because people actually lived in households with their parents. There was something I saw. It was like in the 1600s, the average size of a family household was like 40 people. And then you go into, it was huge. People lived in you know, many generations under one household. And then it got down to 20 people, you know, a couple centuries later. And now it's down to like 3, and then it's down to like 1, right?
We're at 4, and we're still kicking 2 out of the house, man.
I know. And I was, it's like we live in much. So you think about it. If you live in a household back in previous centuries that was that large.
Right.
If you had to retire, you had a lot of other people that could take care of you.
They had their own insurance company.
They really did.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about that. I mean, you didn't need a lot of the insurances that you need now back then. So why plan for insurance, or why would you ever learn? That's a really good point, Evan. I mean, you think about why do you have to learn those types of things? Why do you have to learn the craft of investing if your company did all of the investing on your behalf through the pension plan?
Yeah.
And then the reality of it was that, you know, companies now have so much competition from all around the world that they had to find ways to cut costs. So what can we do to cut costs? Well, other countries around the world are still living in collectivism, many of them.
Right.
When you think about it, they still live in collectivist type of an atmosphere. So they don't need some of the things that we in America need because of our individualistic type of system that we have. That's just our culture.
Right.
Right.
No,
neither right or not wrong. I'm not saying it's good, bad, or anything or anything like that. But that is so interesting to me that we've actually had to go and cut something out that would help us cope because of the fact that we're competing with other cultures that don't have the same issues that we do. So if you look at that and say, okay, now these companies, it's being the lowest cost provider is really the most important thing. We have to cut out that. So what do? We hand over the job of saving for retirement to the individual. So, you know, that's one of the things. I mean, you think about Germany. Well, we didn't even get a retirement. Wasn't even a thing.
Right. Right.
I mean, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't until 1881 that Otto von Bismarck, actually came up with this idea of, and he was in competition politically and had to come up with something that, that people would vote for.
Right.
And that's where that all came from. So the whole idea of a, of an old age social insurance program came from, you know, literally 1881 Prussia. I mean,
who also learned from the Roman Legion, but that's another story.
There you go. So we look at this and go, okay, so this is really interesting to me that we don't do this planning because culturally it has never been a thing to do planning. And
right.
maybe we have to learn to change things. Maybe we have to learn that this is a responsibility that we have, and we have to actually take some time to do this because, you know, it is such an important thing. So that's one thing. And then Social Security was another one. I was actually talking to one of the guys in your office, and he goes, well, yeah, Social Security is another good example, Paul.
Uh-huh.
And I said, yeah, you know, you look at the 1980s, and taking Social Security, you took it at age 62. That was the optimal age to take Social Security at that point in time. And it was because of demographics. It was because of, you know, if you looked at mortality tables and interest rates, it just made more sense at that particular point in time. And, you know, and for some people, you know, it actually makes a whole lot more sense, you know, to actually delay it even longer. And of course, the age for Social Security is later.
Right.
And, you know, you have to really weigh that decision. But it's just funny how we cling to things, and there are people right now that just as soon as I'm eligible for Social Security, I'm going to take it, and I'm going to grab it as soon as I possibly can, and that may or may not be very a good idea, because people say, well, they're going to reduce Social Security later, and I go, well, they're probably going to reduce it across the board. If you know it's going to be, if your benefit was going to be $2,000 and it's going to be reduced by 20%, it's going to be $1,600. If it was going to be $1,000, they're going to reduce that and it's going to be $1,600. So it's still going to be half of a benefit, and it's not necessarily a good idea. But it's just I just thought that was kind of an interesting thing. Are there other things you guys think about that? Why we always do things the way we do them in retirement planning?
Well, I know early on, and we're almost at the next, you know, S curve of a generation that adopted something. But early on in my career, my client's parents never had long-term care insurance.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that kind of back to the family unit and life expectancy and so forth. And then all of a sudden, nursing homes actually became a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the insurance industry said, well, hey, let's create nursing home insurance and long-term care insurance. And it was kind of the Wild West early on.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, I'm going to use the term hard sell, not from the standpoint of, you know, thumbscrews, but just it was a new concept of, well, gee, my mom and dad never had long-term care insurance,
sure.
You know, and so we do learn a lot of those things from our parents.
Right.
And their parents didn't have nursing home insurance. And so it was just kind of a new thing. We're kind of at the point where a lot of people that were the early adopters, their kids are now 55.
Sure.
60, and they've at least had some experience with, yeah, I had a family member that had cover, you know, that's, so that's been one of the generational.
Yeah, well, technology, you think about technology too, you know, you go back 30, 40 years, and the technology wasn't there to keep people alive as long.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in the greatest of shape either.
Right.
You know, you might be living into your 80s and 90s, not in the greatest of shape, but that shows you just the desire of humans to keep going on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's even though you may not be in the best of shape, you don't go and say, hey, you know what? Just can you just cut the cord? And I don't want to do this anymore. People have an unbelievable desire to carry on. I remember my father actually used to talk about that. And he said, if I ever get in that condition, you can just shoot me. He would literally say
that. Oh, I've heard that. Yeah. Years.
Well, he got in that condition, and he never asked us to do that. You know, it's
right.
It's a whole different story. We don't. we don't have that desire. But, you know, what happens is as time goes on, the technology gets better. And it's not that it's always terrible that you're always in horrible shape and you wish you weren't around.
Yeah.
But the technology has had it so that we do need more help later on in life many times. So, yeah, that definitely happens. And then, you know, I also think about, you know, just as we age and you talk about long-term care and those types of things, I think it'll be interesting to see how changes will come about in the future that we'll have to plan for, because technology will make it so that we don't necessarily need the nursing homes, because we may automate a lot of things. You know, you have an automatic robot that runs around and cleans up your house and vacuums.
Rosie.
Yeah, exactly. You can Rosie from the Jetsons. Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
There you go. Make yourself irreplaceable, right?
You know,
as much as you can.
You know, you mentioned something I hadn't really even given much thought when you were talking about early on.
Right.
It made sense to take Social Security at 62 and so forth.
Right.
I've been surprised that the Social Security Administration, and it's, you know, it'd be a political nightmare, but I've been surprised that they haven't changed the 7% and 8% growth rate.
Right.
Now that we're in this, you know, 1-2% interest rate environment, and that was kind of a slow rate, which led to some of that making sense, and that really hasn't adjusted over the years with
the mortality
declining interest
table
rates.
That they're using is old. It's like 1980s mortality tables too, you know. So it's really bizarre. Yeah. I was reading something the other day, and I thought, wow, you know, you think, well, that is kind of interesting, but that's the reason that the growth rate is so high is because they're using such old mortality tables. You know, so you think about it, people were dying much younger, and therefore you had to give them a much greater increase in benefit to get them to put it off to age 70 was really what it got down to. So that made some sense to me. But, you know, it just kind of goes down to how we just never change things. We just it reminds me of a pastor actually told the story one day. He used to like to tell his story about this this lady that was she was cooking with her mom around Thanksgiving, and they had the ham, and she would cut the ham, the ends off, and she says, "Mom, why do we do that?" And the mother goes, "You know, I really don't know, but we've always done that." And then she says, "Well, you know, my mom always used to do it." And she says, "Well, I'm going to go talk to Grandma." And she goes talk to Grandma, and she says, "Well, Grandma, why do we cut the ends of the ham off?" And the grandmother goes, "Well, because, you know, I always had this pan that was too short. And I couldn't fit it in unless I cut the ends of the ham off." So, you know, when we think about retirement planning, you don't necessarily want to do things the way your parents did it, which is no planning. Think about it, as Ira likes to say, as the longest vacation that you will ever take. And you would plan for your vacations. Planning for retirement, probably not a bad idea either.
All right. Let's change gears now.
What, Evan?
Yeah, the this was fun.
Like holding the newspaper, like I got help. Yeah, it reminds me of those things where you know, the husband's sitting there holding the newspaper, and the wife's in the Norman Rockwell where he's holding the newspaper and she wants to talk, and he's got the newspaper in front of her face.
Dagwood and Blondie or whatever. Yeah.
No.
I'm reading this nice paper. Actually, this is about, I don't know, it's about 24 pages. Wall Street Investor is the title of the paper, Disruptive Stock Spotlight. Here's this great headline on the front. Biden's War on Tobacco, Creating Disruptive Game Changer for New Tobacco-Free Alternative. And, of course, he's shaking his fist. And they got a picture of Warren Buffett talking about his favorite stock sector. And so you're kind of going through this thing, and it looks like
a
newspaper.
You want to suck people in. Go, Warren Buffett's interested in this.
This has come to your house and so forth. And forgive me for trying to. This thing's like 8 feet tall.
Well, it's like somebody said to me the other day, "I heard Warren Buffett's doing this." I'm just shaking my head. No, he's not.
So the fun thing was I said, "Cindy, let me dig through this thing because this is going to be good for the show."
Okay.
Because I know there's a disclaimer in this paper somewhere.
That's funny.
And here it is on, you know, like page 21.
So they're telling you to buy this stock, right? They think is like the hottest thing.
That's
going to be disruptive and you need to buy it.
And there's like 18 articles and then you have something on how wonderful tobacco is just in general and so forth.
I haven't heard that in a long time.
Yeah,
right.
Since they took down the Marlboro
Yeah,
man.
If this was on Facebook, there'd be so. Like a COVID disclaimer or something. Yeah. Anyway,
Come
we get to
way,
this
baby.
Towards the bottom of this page, and it's about, I don't know, looks like about 7 inches tall.
Mm-hmm.
Important notice and disclaimer.
Yeah.
All investments are subject to risk, which must be considered on an individual basis
okay.
before making any investment decision. This paid advertisement includes a stock profile of, can I mention the stock or not?
Yeah, go ahead.
TAAT Global Alternatives, Inc.
Okay.
And it's an over-the-counter stock. And Wasatch Investment Network is an investment newsletter being advertised herein.
Uh-huh.
This paid advertisement is intended solely for information and educational purposes, blah, 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 blah.
But it looks like a newspaper article.
But the whole paper looks like a paper.
It does. I mean, it's like a regular newspaper. That's not a regular
look
newspaper?
Like articles. No, it's just an ad. The whole thing
is an ad.
Is an ad. Now, what was interesting
They've come
was,
a long way since, like, one of those things you used to get on the fax machine. You know,
oh, yeah.
You remember those? You know, you get this thing that they say, oh, you got to get this thing, this penny stock.
My favorite is the email that says, oh, I didn't mean to send you this stock tip on blah, blah, blah. I meant that for Bill. Sorry. And that would go out to,
seen that.
You know, like 10,000 people.
Uh-huh.
And so, of course, you're quickly looking at this ticker symbol.
Right,
I mean,
this is
back when email was a welcome thing and new as opposed to
how fast can I delete these things?
Yeah.
Wow, I got an email.
You know,
you
but
got
you'd
mail.
Have these fake emails. Yeah. But what struck me was this is actually one of the few honest newspapers I've opened up in a while.
Yeah.
Is, hey, this is just a paid advertisement for
this stock.
And there's so much, you know, we talk about fake news. It's almost become a joke
in
society. But people believe this stuff. They just actually, because of securities law, had to put in a thing that says, hey, we're just trying to get you to buy the stock. You know? So it was kind of interesting.
Well, the ones that get me is on TV because the disclaimer is so fast and it is so small you can't read it. Now, I'll stop the TV and I'll stop and I'll read it just for the fun of it. But who is going to do that? And you'll hear the most outrageous claims. You know, they've got one. There's a commercial out there right now. And they actually say that we beat the S&P 500 by 5 times or something like that. And then it's like since, you know, in little fine print, since a certain date.
In the last 9 weeks, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, who's going to read it?
Last Thursday between 1 and 2.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. It's you know, you'll have the magazines, they would advertise mutual funds that had 5-star ratings and you don't realize that the fund company has 1,200 different mutual funds. And they just advertised the 3 or 4 that had the really good performance. And, you know, the disclaimer is that past performance is no guarantee of future results, but past performance is no guarantee almost sounds like it's no guarantee, but it's a pretty good indicator.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's a pretty good indicator, sure.
And the sad thing is, you know, this is not a cheap thing to print and mail to however many households, you know, whatever list I'm on.
A lot more
even
expensive
get this
than
thing.
A fax, yeah.
Now,
which means it works.
It must work, yeah.
Was there anything in there to get you to subscribe to that newspaper? And maybe they're trying to sell
that. If there was,
I
haven't found it yet, but I might dig through it over the rest of the weekend.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like people say, well, you know, people don't fall for advertising. Oh, yeah, why do they spend so much on Super Bowl ads? You know, so the reality of it is people do fall for advertising.
No, better yet, why do they spend so much money for Super Bowl ads? Why do they pay actors? Because actors have this big presence.
Oh, sure.
And they pay actors a lot of money. And people tend to gravitate more toward the ads that have the famous actor than everyday people.
I remember that's not an amateur gecko. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's a professional gecko.
Well, I remember a major, major well known actor that it was actually doing advertising for financial firms. And I did some research on it. And he would do the advertising. Absolutely. You know, you pay and didn't want to talk to you, though. Didn't want to talk to the firm to find out anything about what the firm did. And they would do the advertising. And I thought, well, wait a minute. You don't know anything about what we do and what.
Yeah.
And I had a guy that was a radio guy. And he's not around here anymore. He's no longer in the Nashville market. It's not Phil or anybody. You know, it's not, you know, it was this one guy, and he actually came in and he said, I don't really need to know what you do. And I says, well, let me show you what we know. I can sell you. And I said, I don't want anything to do with you if you don't know anything about what we do.
Right.
If you can sell cheap hotels,
that was the thing. That's the thing I love about the guys on WTN is every one of them. Every one of them wanted to know exactly what we did and really wanted to do the research. And that was my criteria for having them endorse and actually advertise and do any talking about us.
Right.
They had to know what we do.
Yeah,
as far as I was concerned. Yeah. So anyway, that's interesting. It's a sad commentary on the investing industry, but you know, it's the nature of it. You know, buyer beware. A lot of times you don't really know what it is, whether there's a conflict of interest going on or not, unless you read that fine print. And hardly anybody ever actually reads the fine print. They don't read prospectuses. They don't read much of anything that the investment industry puts out. And people, if they did read the prospectuses, I think most of the time that they would run like heck from the vast majority of investments that are out there in reality. I mean, it just, you know, just the whole issue of just disclosure and disclosing things that people won't read is sadly laughable to me, you know, in my humble opinion.
Well, you think about the label on a cigarette pack, that's in, you know, size 6 font, and people still just ignore it.
Right.
Which is their choice. I'm not making a value statement, but if you give them 32 pages of fine print, they're sure not going to dig through that.
I suppose the difference in something is highly addictive, like nicotine, and you know, this.
Stock picking's
well, yeah,
addictive.
You know, that's a really good point. Let me take that back. You're right; it is highly addictive.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one.